Now, many of you will be familiar with this little building. It looks pretty, and that's not an up-to-date picture. I have that picture in because that's the church in its original style. And please notice the steel window frames. They're very ornate. But there wasn't any compulsion placed on the church to replace light with light when they were being replaced. So you'll see in other pictures later, wooden window frames. They don't look half as neat and grand. But anyway, I have to compliment the Listed Lear people for how well they've kept the building, and that's a big part of my story. Turn a blind eye to the headstones and grave surrounds in the tarmacked car park. They are not original. Now, you'll want to have a look inside. Listed Lear was the first Baptist church in East Tyrone, and that's its original interior layout. And you'll see the oil lamps there hanging from the ceiling. But if you look further forward to the pulpit, you'll see there's an oil lamp at either end of the pulpit. So maybe if the preacher hadn't inspiration, he had perspiration. I don't know. But there it is, and I show you that to impress on you that a central aisle was original. But it hasn't lasted all the time since. Well, now, we come to the story. Initially, the young church had several meeting places in the Dunmore area. The founding members of the new church may have been the remnant of a Campbellite church in Dunmore village. The pastor was a Mr. Hurt, who was also a noted herbalist in those days. The Campbellites taught baptismal regeneration. That church had a meeting house and a manse on Dunmore Main Street. Sometime prior to 1866, the church died out and the two properties were sold. The group of eight or nine earnest Christians first met in a loft at Backford, Dunmore, that's roughly on the Pomeroy Road, and then they had a Campbellite, they had a manse on the main street, and in a laneway beside the manse, they had this building that was known as the Campbellite Church. Now, the new group moved around a bit. First of all, Backford, then in this old building in Dunmore, the former Campbellite Church. The young church then moved to the Listed Lear area and met in a wooden hall across the road from the site of the planned building. But first things first, and what I'm really impressed about here is how quickly the church moved to get a preacher, a pastor. First things first. The church applied to the Central Committee of the British and Irish Baptist Home Mission in 1866, asking for an agent of the mission to be located in Listed Lear. The leaders of the work in Ireland were so impressed with the progress that they nominated Pastor John Dixon to the oversight of the church. Under his leadership, the church embarked on the erection of the present building on a site given by a certain William Foster. Plans were drawn by John Donnelly, a stonemason who happened to be a Roman Catholic and who lived on the farm beside the church site. The builder, Adam Hunter of Drumconner, was another stonemason and a very good one. And stone for the building was obtained from Carlin Quarry about a mile away. Complete with porch and vestry, the building cost £300. Oh boy. That was money in those days. The opening services were held on the 13th of December 1870 at 12 noon and 6:30. So the church was constituted in 1866. The new building wasn't available until 1870. Now, here's something. A flyer from the original services. Can you read it from there? Opening services in connection with the Baptist Chapel, Listed Lear. Sermons will DV be preached in the above place of worship on Tuesday, 13th December 1870, at 12 o'clock noon and 6:30 evening by the Reverend R.M. Henry A.M. Belfast. Now, do the historians among you recognise that name? In connection with? Absolutely, you're right, Joan. Now, look at the footnotes. Collections will be taken up after each sermon, in order, if possible, to render this place of worship free of debt. Now, they've been very gracious here, aren't they? The attendance and aid of Christian friends are respectfully requested. and they're going a step further that nobody gets away. Contributions from those unable to attend will be thankfully received by J. Dixon Pastor or Mr. W. Irwin Dunnethmore. Well, as it turns out, collections on that day amounted to £25, which almost cleared the debt. Now, there are a few things that a new church has got to think about, and one of them is the trust deeds. The problem is that church members probably don't think about trust deeds not even once in their lives. But church office bearers must think about trust deeds to secure the right to use the building. The trust deeds say that they permit the said place of worship or meeting house to be used as a place of public religious worship by the Society of Protestant Dissenters called Particular or Calvinistic Baptists. Now then, many churches would understand that term. Well, that's the stuff they were made of in those days. Here's another issue a new church has got to think about. Participation at the Lord's table. Though it is expressly intended that the society assembling in the said meeting house shall at all times be confined in the choice of a minister or pastor to persons of the denomination aforesaid, yet it shall be lawful for the members of the said society for the time being, if they shall so choose, to admit to the table of the Lord's Supper any person or persons professing repentance toward God and faith in their Lord Jesus Christ, although such persons shall not be of the denomination aforesaid. They knew it, they believed, but they had an open table. One more thing is important. The church opened on the 13th of December, and the next church meeting was the 1st of January. Oh no, that's a year later, 1871. At that time, the church roll registered 22 members. And from that date onwards, the church roll bears the words added, resigned, separated, which show that firm discipline was maintained. An entry sometime in 1875 is headed, "Discipline as bearing on absentees from church worship." I'll not burden you with all they said under that heading. But I'm anxious to hurry forward to tell you about the Reverend John Dixon, the first minister of Lisnadlea. He was born in Breisgean in 1836, and he lived through the 59 revival. And it was in that context that he decided to study for the gospel ministry. I think he must have been intending to be a Presbyterian minister, because he entered McGee College, Londonderry, and was a student on its rolls in the first year of its existence. But it was in Glasgow University that he completed his collegiate education. He came to Dunnethmore in 1866 and bought a small farm in the townland of Creve, about half a mile from the future site of Lisnadlea Church. Would it be a quarter mile or just a little more away from where the church is?
About half a mile.
About half a mile, right. It was to this house he brought his bride, a Miss Stevenson, a member of a long-established Coal Island family. There were no children of the marriage. Mr. Dixon kept a few cattle on the farm and had a servant boy called Robert John McFadden who lived in the neighbouring townland of Claggan. How do I know all that? Well, I'll tell you later. A capable pastor, a man of indefatigable zeal and boundless energy, John Dixon was described by a contemporary as an evangelist whose labours extend 10 or 11 miles in every direction, and note, who preaches at 18 different stations to congregations of from 20 to 200 persons. You'll see shortly that he was no lazy bones. 10 years after the church was opened, the membership had risen to 40, the Sunday school had 100 scholars and 6 teachers, and there were 12 preaching stations. That means that in addition to the Sunday services and the midweek in Lisnadlea, he had 12 other points that he just kept going around, and people gathered for meetings there. It's interesting that by the end of the century, there were Baptist churches at Dungannon and Gortmerran. Pastor Dixon was involved with these churches. There had been a church at Gortmerran previously, but it had died out. He seems to have set his heart on establishing a Baptist witness in the county town of Omagh, and so from the 28th of December 1879 to the 1st of January 1880, he and the Reverend John Taylor of Tandragee had a mission there. I wonder, has anybody ever done a paper on John Taylor? He's a most interesting person. Anyway, Mr. Dixon reported weather unusually severe, attendance satisfactory, had pleasure of baptizing a young disciple in the adjoining river on the afternoon of New Year's Day. Two large marquees were in the custody of Reverend Dixon for use in evangelistic missions. You have to think about this. One of these was known as the Scotch tent. Nowadays that's not proper. If you have a Scotch tent, that's where you keep the whiskey. You see the point? That's not what they meant. They meant that it was donated by Baptists in Scotland. He reports 250 people attending a mission at Tamniskinny near Rock in August-September 1880. A mission at Milltown Dungannon held during September-October 1883 was attended by 600 on some occasions. The interesting thing is that while these missions were in progress, those who were converted were baptized at Lisnadlear. Baptisms were reported as follows: October 3rd, 5, 17th, 3, 20th, 3, 21st, 1, 22nd, 1, November 1st, 4, and 4th, 1. That season, a mission was also held at Tullnagee in the Carndaisy district near Moneymore. There's not another Tullnagee, is there, Samuel? No. Yeah, well, that's the only one I knew of. Mr. Dixon had the help of Mr. Wainwright, Stockton on Tees, Mr. Taylor, Tandragee, Mr. Phillips and his son from Grange, and Mr. Simpson from Belfast. Mr. Simpson was blind, but this didn't hinder him maintaining an itinerant evangelistic ministry around the country. The church report for 1877 mentions the fruit of Sunday school work. From the Sunday school, five young friends joined the membership of the church during the past year, one of them not yet 11 years of age. Here and there in the Lisnadlear Minute books in after years, there's mention of the hard-working Lisnadlear pastors serving in Dungannon also. The Baptist Association elected John Dixon as president for 1880. His presidential address, which is worth reading, is recorded in full in the October magazine of that year. He served in the nomination as editor of the Irish Baptist magazine from 1882 until June 1886. John Dixon's labours as pastor, evangelist, magazine editor, plus a large amount of deputation work in England and Scotland on behalf of the work in Ireland, must have required the stamina of Goliath. Little wonder that in 1888 he had a serious breakdown in health, and recuperation required several months in Portrush. The church had a welcome home for the good man and his wife in January 1889. In 1891 he received the anonymous call to the church at Coleraine, which he accepted, and so a notable ministry of more than 25 years came to an end. That was the longest pastorate in the past 150 years. Mr. Ray comes second with 21 years. Members and friends of Lisnadlear and Dungannon gathered in Dungannon on the 26th October at 6:30 p.m. for the 7th annual meeting of that church. And there John Dixon received from his many friends in the district an address and presentation to their friend. William James Morrow, treasurer of Lisnadlear, presented Mr. Dixon with a purse of sovereigns. After 3 years ministry at Coleraine, John Dixon died on Saturday evening, 29th September 1894, aged 58. He was interred in the family burying ground at Bruchane. A thorough missionary and a good scholar who loved his work well, a faithful and efficient pastor, an admirable preacher, these were the epitaphs used by his friends to describe John Dixon. During his 25 years in Lisnadlear, there were about 140 baptisms and 120 members added to the church. Lisnadlear had 60 members when Mr. Dixon left in 1891. I was unable to obtain a photograph of Mr. Dixon, Perhaps they weren't so plentiful in those days. However, a Mrs. Mary Jane Wilkerson, Joanne's drummy, then 90 years of age, told me in 1970 that she could remember him clearly. She described him as tall and stout, in other words, well built. She was 11 years old when he left Lisnadeer. Now that was quite an interesting yarn about the first pastor. We move on then to pastor number two, Pastor James W. Pierce, who served from 1891 to 1898. The next pastor was James Pierce, who came to Lisnadeer from Cork in 1891. He was an Irish Baptist College graduate. The church continued to flourish, and 7 years later it had 73 members. Several things during his ministry are worthy of note. He was an ardent temperance worker and formed a Lisnadeer Band of Hope and Temperance Society, which after 2 years had 61 members, and a year later had over 100 pledged abstainers. So he was doing a good work among young men. In 1893, the Baptist churches gave their opinion about home rule, and on behalf of the church, Pastor Pierce wrote, "It's the perfectly unanimous opinion of the members of the Baptist Church and congregation of Lisnadeer, County Tyrone, that the Government of Ireland Bill of Mr. Gladstone, if passed and carried out, would be productive of discord, ruinous to commerce, a source of bitter strife and bloodshed, and a curse to our country, subjecting Protestants everywhere to insult, and wherever possible, to intolerance and boycotting." Our brother adds, "I have been 5 or 6 years in Ireland and know only two home rulers, two Protestants who are home rulers." And he adds, "Many Roman Catholics who have anything to lose are as strongly opposed to it as we are. I was once a Gladstonian." In 1894, the chapel was painted and extra stables erected in the churchyard. In the same year, the church decided to build a manse. And on Friday the 19th of October, a harvest Thanksgiving service was held, which proved a decided success numerically and financially. The collection was devoted to the manse fund. The new manse in Dunamore, still standing, was a very fine stone building, built of Carlin stone like the church, erected in 1896 at a cost of £500. It was a great house. I took that photograph about 1970, so please ignore the car. Is that a Maxi? 1800. Well, there you are. They didn't have them when the Pierces were about. Early in the same year, Pastor Pierce went on a trip to the Holy Land with Mr. Brown of Dunamore, returned in March, passed into the Holy Land of Matrimony on the 6th of April, so reads the Irish Baptist, and he and his bride were the first occupants of the new house. J.W. Pierce removed to Bronixtown at the end of April, 1898. So we've traced Mr. Pierce's movement from Cork to Lisnadeer in 1891, and from there to Bronixtown in 1898. Thereafter, his name appears in Fibsborough, Limerick, and other centres. He seems to have been an agent of the Irish Baptist Home Mission, who moved around under the direction of the committee wherever his help was needed. Now you're going to notice again and again that when Lisnadeer needed a pastor, where did they go? To the college. And they really did give the student and students an opportunity. Next, number three, Pastor J.G.C. Irvine, 1898 to 1901. Pastor Irvine came in 1898 after holding pastorates in London and Canada. It's due to his research and careful records that we have so much information about the beginnings of Lisnadeer. When I wrote the first part of the history in 1970, his map of the graveyard was still being used for our burial records. In more recent times, a new map of the churchyard was produced by David McFarland when he was a member of Lisnadeer. I don't know where Mr. Irvine moved to when he left sometime in 1901. Next, number four, Pastor William Pringle, 1901 to 1904. Mr. Pringle, a Tyrone man, but from where in Tyrone I don't know, followed in 1901. He married a Miss Annie Patterson of Scotch Street, Dungannon, and later they moved to the USA. He seems to have had good friends in other denominations, and on his fourth anniversary in 1904, Reverend D. Manderson of Minterburn Presbyterian Church and the Reverend Henry Shire, Senior Methodist Minister Dungannon, preached at the services on the 28th of August. I'm really sorry that I have no further information about this man, or where he moved to when he left Lisnoglear. Here's a name that you may never have seen before. I can't find anything more on him. Mr. William Cowden, 1905 to 1906. I can confirm that he had been a student at the Irish Baptist College and following the completion of his studies was appointed by the Home Mission Committee to serve Lisnoglear as pastor. How long he stayed or where he went to, I cannot say because of lack of documentation. Now, here's a wonderful man, Pastor Bert Sharp. To my mind, Pastor Bert Sharp had some of the caliber of the first pastor. He was an Englishman, and prior to coming into the ministry was a photographer and artist of no mean ability, winning a gold medal in 1889 and a bronze medal in 1891. Patronised by Her Majesty the Queen, he had studios at 79 West Street, Brighton. I don't know the circumstances which brought him to Ireland, but he came to Belfast and was instrumental in forming the church at Bloomfield in 1903, labouring there with much acceptance for several years before coming to Lisnoglear in 1907. And as most of you will know, the Bloomfield church closed in 2014. Now, this family didn't have an altogether easy time, just various circumstances, not a rebellion on the part of the congregation. Here's Bert Sharp, and there is his family, father and mother and six children. I don't know who the third adult is in the photograph. And then this is his son, one of his sons, Cyril Sharp. Bert Sharp had a family of six children, three boys and three girls. One day his son David took his father's horse and a borrowed cart to fetch some peat mould from the bog for his mother's flower garden. The horse shied at the white flowers in the bog, and horse and cart fell into a waterhole. The local farmers were all at the market, and there was no help at hand. The horse couldn't be rescued and had to be shot. This was a heavy loss to Mr. Sharp. Mr. Thomas McCorkle, the church secretary, opened a relief fund, and in a notice in the Irish Baptist, appealed to all readers to at once send simply a sixpence to defray the cost of a new horse, adding that in the work here, a horse is a necessity. You translate into today's, how many cylinders have you in your engine? What horsepower is it? Bert Sharp was a very active pastor, and as well as the church services at 12 noon and 6 o'clock every Sunday, with a prayer meeting and Bible study on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m., he had the following outstations. And you clear your throat for this one. Stjochan, third Sunday in the month, 7:30. Drone Ballyhue, fourth Sunday in the month, 6:30. Mullaghan Hinch, fifth Sunday in the month at 6. Donoughmore, every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. And then, of course, the Lisnoglear meeting every Wednesday. Caddy, that's near Sandholes, on the Cookstown side of Lisnoglear, every Thursday at 7:30, and Drum. What direction is Drum, Sonia?
Up the Elmer Road from Cookstown.
I see, right, all right. He was also a regular visitor to the fairs at Pomeroy, Stewartstown, Rock and Moy, where he preached in the open air. Now here's where Cyril Sharp comes in. The Sharp family suffered a sad bereavement in 1910. Cyril Sharp, a young man who had the prospect of a brilliant career in the civil service, died in Dublin at the early age of 21. He's buried in the churchyard just beside the entrance to the rear hall. If you're in the church, you're looking at the pulpit wall, his grave's just right out behind the pulpit wall. Pastor Sharp resigned from Listener Dare in July 1913, leaving in sad circumstances because, having reached 62 years of age, he'd become a very sick man. He had hoped to remain in Listener Dare until his death and to be laid to rest beside his son, Cyril. Although hardly fit to travel, he went to his sister's home in England, where after 3 months' intense suffering, patiently borne, passed into the presence of the King. When Bert Sharp came to Listener Dare, there were 44 members, but his successor, Albert Quigley, entered upon lean times. He reported, "We've only one Sunday morning service here now. There were 22 members." And that leads us to Pastor Isaac Bell. Mr. Bell enters the Listener Dare story via Dungannon. He'd been a student at the Irish Baptist College in Dublin. Having graduated, he was open to receive a call to the pastorate of one of our churches. Now this becomes a bit tangled. At a church meeting held on Sunday 9th of March 1913, the Dungannon Church took a unanimous decision to call Mr. Isaac Bell. Another minute reads, "Pastor Bell accepted the invitation of the Dungannon Church and commenced his ministry on Sunday, May the 4th. Mr. Bell assisted Dungannon, Listener Dare, Mullycar and Naconee churches by arrangement with the Irish Baptist Home Mission. He found all this work too much to cope with. He left Listener Dare to become the pastor of Tandragee Church. Number 8 is Pastor Albert M. Quigley. He wrote about the work being reorganized. Pastor Quigley had responsibility for Dungannon, Naconee and Mullycar. Although called by Listener Dare and installed there as minister in 1914, Dungannon seems to have claimed him, because in that church's report for 1916, the writer states, "In May, Pastor Quigley left here to take up the work at Listener Dare, to which he had been called in September 1914. About 9 months later, he informed the church that he had written to the Irish Baptist Home Mission Committee, asking that he might be relieved of some of his work, over which he had been placed by the committee. His renewed interest and increased efforts were well rewarded, because in 1916, Listener Dare's membership increased to 33, and 6 months later, in 1917, the gospel meeting at night, which had been discontinued for a long time, has now an average attendance of 60. Pastor Quigley's ministry in Listener Dare and its sister churches were during the World War I years, when in common with all other denominations, the majority of young men joined the armed forces. Coupled with high unemployment in East Tyrone, family incomes plummeted, and small churches had difficulty making ends meet. A Mr. Tommy Totten of 195 Clifton Park Avenue, Belfast, wrote to me in December 1970, following the anniversary and reopening, to say that Mr. Quigley was a young Dublin man, and during his time at Listener Dare, used to hold weekly gospel lantern services in the lecture hall in Dunmore. Tommy manipulated his lantern, as he put it. He also confirmed that Mr. Quigley went to the USA, and from there sent Tommy's family a paper in which was the account of the opening of a new church which Mr. Quigley had planted. Sadly, he died a short time afterwards, still a comparatively young man. Now here we come to a very interesting man, and I have a special chapter on at the end. But I can say at this stage, as I've treated the others, having completed his studies at the Irish Baptist College, George McKillen was available to serve wherever the Irish Baptist Home Mission Committee directed him. He was sent to Dungannon, Listener Dare and Mullycar in 1919. A big event of 1920 was the presentation of a BSA motorcycle, a gift from the churches to him. It cost well over £100. A project taken up most enthusiastically and subscribed to most generously by the members and friends of Dungannon, Listener Dare, Gortmer, Naconee and Mullycar churches. Remember the date. The presentation was made at Listener Dare on the 12th of March 1920. The second big event was the pastor's marriage to Miss Margretta, or Greta as she was known, McCartney. Two T's in Margretta, two T's in Greta, and small C in McCartney. That was a rule of the family. Who, like her husband, came from Upper Tully near Kells in County Antrim. Following the happy event, the churches assembled again, this time in Dungannon, on Monday the 26th of July 1920, and presented the happy couple with a matching sidecar for the motorcycle. Now that's hard to keep up with the times. There is the famous motorcycle and sidecar combination. That photograph was taken at Tobermore just at the end of the month, and the rider on this occasion is not George McKillen, but a neighbour from nearby. The first of their five children, Ruth, was born while they lived in Dungannon. And when Pastor McKillen moved to Tobermore in 1922, the church at Listenadare had 20 members. There was widespread shock when he died 9 years later, on the 22nd of October 1931, at 40 years of age. His death certificate recorded acute oedema of the trachea. He died for want of breath, and that's not funny. His throat had closed over, and although there was medical help, no one could help him. But the youngest McKillen girl, years later, was working in a hospital office. And at the end of a working day, a senior nurse came into the office to do some business. The two ladies were meeting as strangers, and they exchanged names. And when the nurse heard the name McKillen, she said, "Did your father die at such a time of naming the complaint?" "Yes, sir," Eileen said, "he did." The nurse got a tight hold of the counter. She said, "I was to go and see your father that day, but I was sent somewhere else." And she said, "If I had been to see him, I could have saved his life." She said, "A priest in Draperstown had the same problem, and I saved his life." So doctors, whoever else were there, couldn't help him. And it must have been a desperate death. He was working in his garden on the Tuesday after a heavy weekend, and then had throat problems, and they just increased and increased until Thursday afternoon, when he couldn't get another breath in any way. Sorry death. Now, the McKillen family in Tobermore, shortly before his death. The ages of the children ranged from 10 to 1.5 years. Their names were Ruth. She was later Mrs. Willie McKee of Tobermore. So he knew the butcher, Willie McKee. And she's the mother of George McKee, the present secretary of Tobermore. Their children's names were Ruth, Anna, Jean, Osmond and Eileen. And Osmond and Eileen are the only two surviving to this day. Pastor Jeffrey, 23 to 28. From July 1923 to the end of 1928, Mr. Jeffrey ministered in Listenadare and Dungannon. While in Listenadare, he taught a young woman, Jean Morrow, later Mrs. McKernan, to play the organ, one hymn at a time. For some time, the congregation was confined to her repertoire of tunes. And she served as church organist until 2004. 65 years. That's a record. Mr. Jeffrey was a bachelor. It said he got around the hard way by pedalling an old bicycle that was about ready to fall apart. A lady told him one day, "He should wash that bicycle. Instead of a wash, it will fall apart." At most services, he played the pedal organ and really preached his heart out. He was an earnest pleader with sinners and saw many remarkable cases of conversion during his stay in Dungannon. Now here's a name, I wonder if any of you heard of it down the years, Captain Robert Dagnall of the Church Army. There you are. I remember him meeting him in grandmother's house in a huffle. In March 1927, Captain Robert Dagnall, Church Army, conducted a mission in Listenadare which lasted 6 weeks. He returned in November instead for 4 weeks. Memories of these meetings linger yet in the minds of many of our senior citizens, senior members, who were converted at that time of divine visitation. I was told that the building was crowded in every part, the preacher having only standing room in the pulpit, where he was surrounded by children. I was unable to find further information about Pastor Jeffrey, and therefore I don't know where he went from Lisnard Lear. Now, more of you should remember this gentleman, Pastor William Weir, BA, BSc. He had just graduated from Queen's University, and his first year's salary as a pastor was, wait for it, £23 a year. Pastor William Weir came to Dungannon and Lisnard Lear on the 17th of June 1929. And the report, and in the report for that year, wrote of Lisnard Lear, membership of 23 due to strict revision of the role. He was a bachelor, his sister Mary came with him, and was his housekeeper. His address was Empire Avenue, Dungannon. He was the first pastor of both churches to own a car. Under Mr. Weir's guidance, the building received some attention, and in November 1930 was reopened after extensive renovations. A new ceiling had been fitted. On that occasion, a tablet was unveiled in memory of Mr. and Mrs. James Arnold, two of the founder members of the society and teachers in the Lisnard Lear School. Tobermore called again and claimed Mr. Weir in 1932, as it had claimed Mr. McKillen some years previously. And Mr. F.G.H. Sleeth, anybody ever heard of that name? Mr. F.G.H. Sleeth was a young man of about 20 years of age from County Longford. He was an evangelist and served the church in 1932. He later joined the church army. Now here's a name some of you will remember. Mr. Rivett was called to Dungannon Church in 1935. He'd been pastor of East End Baptist Church in Belfast. He responded positively to Dungannon's call and remained there until 1942. Difficult years for the pastor and the members. World War II was the context. There were average attendances of 13 on Sunday mornings, and not many more in the evenings. In fact, he didn't even use the pulpit. He had a reading desk made and gathered the small congregation to one side of the church. Mr. Rivett was a Dublin man and was a bachelor. His mother, being a widow, lived with her son. Later he married a Dublin lady whose name was Florrie. Did she serve on the Women's Auxiliary Committee? That's all right. I couldn't find anything. There's no record of Mr. Ruddock's service in Lisnard Lear. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? To me, that's astonishing. Most likely, whatever assistance he gave the church was on an ad hoc basis, and by arrangement of Dungannon Church, it seemed to last for a period of up to 7 years. And here's his record of service. Now listen, you're going to have to take 1912 from 1963. What does that give you? 51 years. He served in Harcourt Street, Dublin, 1912 to 15. Then he was assistant pastor in that church, 1915 to 18. Came to Ballykeel, 1920 to 22. East End, Belfast, 22 to 29. And Strandtown, Belfast, 29 to 34. Then Dungannon and Lisnard Lear, 1935 to 42, and after that, Balmahinch, 1942 to 1948. Then he was a tutor at the Missionary Training School, 3 Fitzwilliam Street, Belfast. That's when the Mitchells and the McVickers and the Sloans were all getting ready. And that's where they trained for part of their time anyway. He was a tutor there for a while before returning to Strandtown, where he was pastor until his death in May 1963. 51 years of service. He was minute secretary at the Baptist Union Assembly in Belfast in the late 1950s. He not only kept the minutes but read them immediately afterwards, requiring only a few minutes to complete the final sentences before reading them for formal acceptance by the Assembly. His skill with his pen and words was most impressive. Now, number 14. Pastor Tom Moffat, evangelist, 1934 to 37. He served in Dungannon and Lisnard Lear between 1934 and 37. He was born in Belfast about 1905. He was one of a family of 12 children. The family home was in Dunvegan Street in the Ravenhill district of Belfast. His father, John Moffat, was a labourer in the shipyard. Tom Moffat pursued his theological studies in America, where he was one of a number of Ulster students. Professor J.R. Monte, PhD, DD, at the Northern Baptist Theological Seminary in Chicago said that the Ulster men were among his best students. Returning to Ireland, Mr. Moffat accepted a call to the pastorate at Grange, accepted a call to the pastorate at Lisnadlear. He settled there in 1934 and resigned in 1937. Sometime in 1938, he was called to the church at Grange, County Antrim, where he served until 1941, thus fulfilling a three-year appointment, which seems to be an unusual tenure of office. I can smell a home mission rule behind that. If he hadn't sort of picked up your feet as a church after 3 years' help, well, we can't let our man stay any longer. But no reasons are to be found as to why he moved from Lisnadlear to Grange, other than he was invited. Now, I think I have got numbering wrong. Mr. Joseph Wilson came to Lisnadlear in 1937 with the church for a short time. He had formerly been a Covenanter and hailed from a Hochul district of County Antrim. Now Pastor Rowell. When Pastor Ruddock left Dungannon in 1942, Pastor Rowell was in charge of the Lisnadlear Church. His appointment began in 1939 when he came to Lisnadlear from Athlone, and he married during his ministry in Athlone. He married an Athlone lady whose name I can't remember.
Mabel.
Mabel, but Mabel who? I used to know, but I'd forgotten. Anyway. Like the first minister of Lisnadlear, he responded to a call from Coleraine Church in 1945. His ministry there lasted until his retirement in 1974 for health reasons, his latter years being marked by the loss of his voice, which meant complete silence on his part. And I know that many of you who knew him will agree with me. He was a most gracious believer, a conscientious and godly man, every inch of him. He really was. Now then, Pastor Ray. Pastor Ray came from Limavady in 1946. His ministry was to continue until April 1967. 6 from 7 is 1, 4 from 62, 21 years. Second longest. Mr. Ray was keen to establish a Baptist witness in Cookstown, and 7 years after coming to the district, the Baptist Church was formed there in 1953, and in 1959 opened its own premises at Burn Road. To my mind, the Cookstown Church is a monument to the labours of Pastor Ray. In view of the new work in Cookstown, the manse at Dunamore was sold, and another manse purchased at Old Town Street, Cookstown, but he did not neglect Lisnadlear. The pews were moved to the centre of the building. Now, you remember that impression I gave you at the beginning? The pews were moved to the centre of the building, thus making an aisle up either side, and literally uniting the congregation, which in his early days was very small. A canopy was erected at the rear of the pews inside the entrance to prevent drafts, but they had solid panels, and the men used to gather in the porch on Sunday mornings, and you could not get them to come in when you were announcing the first hymn. So I did away with the wooden panels and put in windows. So if the door opened and they were in the porch, I could still see them. They knew it was time they were in. Anyway, a canopy was erected at the rear of the pews inside the entrance to prevent drafts. Gas lighting and heating were installed. New walls and gates were erected in the churchyard. A new clock and carpeting were installed at that time. Before leaving in 1967, Mr. Ray arranged for the fitting of a new ceiling and the installation of electric lighting, both of which were in order when the new pastor arrived in July 1967 to take charge of Cookstown and Lisnadlear churches. Now there's the good man, and I think that's a very good photograph of him. But can you get the idea? There used to be two rows of pews. So those pews have an open end next to the wall. So if you take the pews from that side and the pews from that side and bring them over like that, and then join them in the middle. You've united the congregation, and two rows of pews become one, making two aisles and uniting the congregation. So I thought I couldn't leave out those photographs. They certainly make the point. Now here's another important photograph. This is Alec Morrow and his wife Sarah and their large family. David's mother is among them there. Is that her second from left in the
middle?
That's her there.
And Granny.
Oh yeah, that's her. Right, yes.
And that's Jean on the back row.
That's Jean Morrow. That's Mrs. McTiernan. That's right. Alec Morrow and their large family, all of whom grew up at Listen to Your Church and Sunday School. At the church's centenary in 1966, a new communion table and chair were presented by, to his memory, by his widow Sarah and his family. He was a faithful secretary and deacon for many years. Pastor and Mrs. Ray were helpmeets to each other. They were a wonderful team. For 21 years, they invested themselves in caring for the Listed Lear and Cookstown churches. Their children, Rupert and Audrey, were involved in this with their parents. And Mr. and Mrs. Ray were laid to rest in the churchyard at Listed Lear beside the grave of Cyril Sharp, where they await the resurrection from the dead when Jesus comes again. Now, this is my contribution. I served with the Home Mission in County Waterford and County Fermanagh since 1962 before accepting anonymous calls to the churches at Cookstown and Listed Lear in 1967. I'm glad to report that the young people gave me an encouraging start to my ministry. Joanne was among them, and together the then new BYF did some interesting and worthwhile things. With regard to the churchyard and the church premises, I was a hands-on man, and I'm glad to say that the menfolk, and some young people too, did their best to come alongside and help in whatever ways they could. Now, two memories will bear telling. One Saturday when we were digging a septic tank system on the left as you approach the church door, we came close to a fatality when we hit running sand. One of our deacons had gone down a ladder into the hole, and he hit the running sand first. And it took all the men who were present that day to pull him out. And he was a shocked man when he came out. I'm glad to say that George Walker survived the experience and lived for many years afterward. He's gone to his reward since. The other memory is equally valid for different reasons. If I mention Meals on Wheels, at least some of the men of my age will remember on Saturdays when we were working, Mrs. Steenson, the secretary's wife, appeared with a wheelbarrow with all we needed for midday refreshments on board. Good grub travelled in that wheelbarrow. She kept us well fed, and she has since gone to her eternal reward. 1970, there were 31 members, and a full church program was maintained. Sunday at 12:30 and 5:30, in order to cooperate with the evening service in Cookstown, which was held at 7. About 45 attended the Sunday morning service and about 60 attended the late evening service. Sunday school was rather small with 3 teachers and 16 scholars. Since November 1969, the evening service on the first Sunday of each month was changed to 8:15 so that a service in Marie Orange Hall could be well supported. Changes of various kinds were made at that time. Electric heating was installed, the old furnace room was converted into toilets and the kitchen, and with the initiative of the Youth Fellowship and the help of many friends, a new piano and Hammond organ were purchased. To mark the centenary of the building, a new hall and vestry were erected and have since proved very useful. This is at the rear of the church, the bit you don't see from the road. The church was completely redecorated inside and a new pulpit and platform were added. The baptistry was renovated and tiled. Many gifts were received, 2 chairs to match the communion table a flower table, a wall text complete with spotlight, a desk light for the pulpit, a desk for the vestry, a hymn board, new cups and saucers, and a substantial contribution towards chairs for the new hall. The old stables were given a badly needed facelift and a concrete floor laid in them. Over £1,500 was spent on these improvements. The Tyrone County Council, at our request, erected the direction sign to the church at the Haran Crossroads. My 9 years enlisted there in Cookstown Baptist Churches were among the happiest and the most fulfilling of my life. When I accepted appointment to the position of Secretary of the Baptist Union in 1967, it was a step of faith. However, the Lord, who had sustained me in pastoral work, also sustained me administrative work for the next 18 years. And that's what our family looked like when we were leaving Cookstown in 1976. Irene, now a senior lecturer in Queens and Food Science. Ian, now pastor in Armagh. And then myself. Then John in the centre. He's an estate agent in Newton Arch. Then my good wife with Janet on her knee. And then Elaine, she's now a school secretary, and David, he's a bank official in Scotland and a farmer the rest of the time. It's astonishing how they all find their places. Mr. Rennie, here's Mr. Rennie's contribution. He succeeded me in 1976 with a break of maybe only a few months. And the church, with a membership of 42, embarked on the erection of a new manse at Cork Hill Rock, Dungannon. It was duly completed in July 1978 at a total cost of £26,000. So there's Mr. Rennie and the office bearers he inherited. In 1991, the church's 125th anniversary, Mr. Rennie reported that the church had three deacons and one elder, the longest serving of whom was Mr. Fred Morrow, who was church treasurer. That's him, bottom left. And had been in membership for over 50 years. Mr. W.G. Steenson, that's him, bottom right, transferred to Cookstown after serving as member and secretary for over 50 years. And for the first time in the history of the church, an elder, Mr. David McFarland, was elected. Our organist, Mrs. Joan McKernan, at that time, had served in that capacity for over 50 years. There's the new manse at Cork Hill. Missions were conducted in Marie Orange Hall in 1975 and 76, and since then, a monthly service was held there on the second Sunday of the month at 8 o'clock. Times of the other services were as follows: Sunday morning 11:30, evening service at 6:30, midweek prayer meeting and Bible study Wednesdays at 8. Mr. Rennie left Lisnadlear in 1984 to take up the pastorate at Portrush. Now there's a fairly typical photograph of John Burney. Doesn't he look well? His induction service was the 14th of September 1984, chaired by Pastor Clifford Morrison, with charges to the pastor by Pastor Alfie Orr, and to the church by Pastor J.A. Smith. The spacious manse was ideal for John and Dorothy and their five children, whose attendance at the local Lisnadlear Primary School afforded immediate links with many neighbouring families in the area. John really traded in those. Membership grew a little over those years to 46, with several coming to faith through the witness of the church. Church office bearers were David McFarland, Elder, Samuel Benson, Kenneth Campbell, Kenneth Kerr, Fred Morrow, George Walker, and Johnny Wilkinson, John's father. Highlight the things that John promoted. A number of evangelistic missions were organised, including several in the church building, one in a portable hall in Dunmore, which was the birthplace of the church, and one in the same portable hall erected at Pomeroy for the purpose, at which the late Jim Henry preached. Regular systematic door-to-door or farm-to-farm visitation was carried out by John Burney, enhanced during the summer by visiting by teams. A youth work was commenced in late 1984, meeting on Friday evenings. This attracted somewhere between 20 and 30 young people each week, many of whom were collected in a church minibus purchased to assist in this and in other aspects of young people's work. BYF was carried on faithfully by Kenneth Campbell, a deacon, after Mr. Burney left, fulfilling a valuable role in reaching young people and nurturing young believers. A young married group was initiated and met monthly in the months for fellowship, Bible study and group discussion. This proved to be a popular and useful innovation. Each summer from 1985 to 1990, BY teams were invited to help with summer outreach in the area. These teams of young people stayed in the manse for anything up to 10 days. The spaciousness of the manse proving again to be so useful. As part of each summer's outreach, a week-long children's holiday Bible school was organized and conducted in the same portable hall used for missions. In the first summer, numbers grew from 65 to 95 over 5 days. The annual event attracted children from the surrounding area and also from the villages of Pomeroy, New Mills and Dunnoughmore. It grew each year so that 1990. Numbers averaged 110 with a midweek peak that year of 119. John was given the opportunity to teach religious education in the Royal School Dungannon, 2 days each week, from the spring term of 1985 until the summer term of 1990. This was an invaluable opportunity to influence and instruct young people, and also a real boon when it came to his door-to-door or farm-to-farm visitation. For it opened opportunities to talk to parents that he met on his visitation. For the Burney family, one very special aspect of the years spent at Listenadmere was the warmth and kindness of neighbours, leading to an unforgettable night in early September 1990 when they packed Mullingar Orange Hall to say a community farewell. John did a marvellous job. Now, the man who came after him didn't forget the legacy he had received from John, Billy Reid. First Saturday of 1991 was the occasion of the induction of Billy Reid as pastor of Listenadmere. He previously served in the Larne Church for over 16 years, first as on the staff of the Irish Baptist Home Mission and then as pastor. He had been in Listenadmere a very short time when there was tension in the community. It was part of the Troubles. A terrorist shooting incident close to the church in Pastor Reid's first year resulted in the deaths of a local father and son, and heightened the tension in the area. The church, however, had good standing in both sections of the community, despite the political tensions. This was in part due to the fact that it was a long-established congregation, and to the excellent work and efforts of his predecessor, Pastor John Burney, among all sections of the community. I cheered when I read that note from Billy Reid. He was a big enough man to acknowledge they had received a really good legacy from the previous pastor. Now, I just skip through these headings. Billy promoted the Amazing Journey ministry around the local schools and found wide acceptance. And then, in his time, a major renovation project on the church building was also undertaken, which lasted about 2 years. Now, during that time, all that remained at one point of the active church building was the four walls. Nobody took a photograph of that, otherwise you'd see it. The church met in what was known as the lower hall. That was the stable block that Samuel and myself in particular used to spend nights at. In the lead up to the year 2000, the four churches in close proximity to each other met to discuss how they would mark the millennium. And they resolved to do missions together in each area, in the area around each church, and then together. And the result was that each of the four churches reported that at least one person with connections to it either professed faith or was restored to the Lord. Now, this is how Listenadmere looks today. I want you to notice the new gates and railings. I want you to notice the extended burying ground right up to that hedge at the back. And I note the old stables on the right. Now, this is after they've been renovated because they've got new doors and windows. And they are now known as the lower hall. Now, This is the original porch entrance, and that's the entrance to the hall at the back of the church. Now, I wanted you to see this, because when they put on the new roof and did everything else, they bought some pews from Scotland. Yeah. That was it. And this has turned rather dull, but I can't do anything about it. Here we have the centre aisle back again. And these pews from the church had these umbrella stands on them. I was there for a Sunday school anniversary, a month ago. And I tell you, that would do your heart good. That's the view from the porch. And this is the view from the pulpit. And the only decorations that needs are people in the pews. Best decoration of all. So, I wanted you to see that, because it was well doing. It was a job worth doing, and it was done well. And I knew you would enjoy looking at these photographs. During Pastor Reed's ministry, Mrs. Jean McKernan, who by that time had been organist for over 65 years, retired from her post, thus completing a remarkable period of faithful service. Mr. Reed left Blissford Lea in October 2003 when he accepted a call to Tangergee Church. Now we come to Pastor Kyle Warren. He was there from 2004 to 2007. He had come from Londonderry, where he had been assistant pastor. On the very first Sunday of his pastorate, after he had finished preaching, the news arrived that Jean McKernan had passed away. He says, thankfully there were more weddings than funerals in my time at Listener there. He also worked with Baptist Youth Evangelism Team. And then they had a mission, and the four surviving pastors and himself preached through a week. And the ministry and attendance were excellent throughout the week, and Listener Lear members, and indeed many from the local community, were delighted to renew fellowship with the former pastors. There was an active youth fellowship and ladies fellowship, although the Sunday school was small with 6 pupils. Men's fellowship was commenced, and the attendance at this remained positive over a sustained period of time. He was able to get an opening into schools, including Roman Catholic schools. And the whole church played their part in this endeavour. It was wonderful to see the children and their teachers, among them a Roman Catholic priest, listen so attentively to the oral and visual presentation given about the lives of characters in the Bible and the message of the gospel. The feedback from the schools was extremely positive, and many children requested copies of the New Testament. I left Listener Lear in 2007, he says, and shortly afterwards became pastor of Lantara Baptist Church in Ballymena. At the time of writing, I had been pastoring in Templemore Hall in East Belfast for the past 3 years. Now, here's a friend you'll know. Pastor Winston Jordan. He says, I've been associated with Listener Lear Baptist Church for many years, and particularly since the mid-80s, when Pastor John Burney was pastor and I was serving on the staff of Baptist Missions. He got to know the Listener Lear people when mission halls were being moved from one area to another, or running repairs had to be done. He says those were the days. Having got to know the church in that way, I was asked occasionally to preach at the services. Towards the end of 2007, I preached more regularly on Sundays and also at the midweek services on Wednesdays. 2008, I was asked to conduct all the Sunday services and Bible studies and prayer meetings on Wednesdays. I was also responsible for visitation and the men's fellowship once a month from autumn to spring. My appointment at that time was not permanent and could be ended either by the church or by me at any time, so that the church could meet and hear prospective pastors. He says in 2009 he was asked to continue in all the above ways until a permanent appointment was made, and so for the most of 6 years I was pastor in all but name. In the last year I preached 2 Sundays per month until a pastor was called. I enjoyed the country style church. They were my kind of people, and I can believe that easily. Now, this is the present pastor, Pastor Jonathan Ray. He was formerly a pastor missionary in Santiago in Chile. with the Gospel Mission of South America for more than 7 years. Feeling that the Lord was calling his family home to continue in pastoral work in Ireland, he returned in May 2012. In October of that year, he received a call to the pastorate at Miss Nidlear. He accepted the call and was inducted in January 2013. His wife is a native Chilean. Her name is Carolina. Their daughter, Noemi, and son, Timothy. And then, of course, Jonathan himself make up the family. The second Sunday of his new pastorate, Mr. Ray had the joy of welcoming 6 new members into the fellowship. And this brought the membership to the total of 38. And then 2 more members were brought in. The attendance increased to around 45 to 50 on a Sunday morning, and on Sunday evening 35 to 45 are present. He's grateful for the faithfulness of everyone in the church for supporting the various ministries. And then in a farm just up the road, as the road rises to go out to the Cookstown Road, they had a mission on the Sloss family farm. They called the mission on the hill. And we thank God for the good number who attended, and for the good number of unsaved friends who came. During the 2 weeks, we had about 30 unsaved friends and neighbours in attendance. And I'm going to pop down to this footnote. When this PowerPoint presentation was in the course of preparation, Pastor Ray announced that he'd be moving from Listenadier at the end of July 2016, having accepted a call to the Glengormley Baptist Church in Newton Abbey. There's the old school at Listenadier. Joanne went there. Some famous people went there, you see. A history of the church wouldn't be complete without it, although it wasn't the church's school. It was a local primary school, and the local minister was asked to help whenever he was needed. Now, it's not looking as good as that now, because it's a ruin now. It may have been begun between 1824 and 26, and in the report of the Commissioners of Irish Education, it's named as one of the 18 schools in the civil parish of Donoughmore. Listenadier, Hugh Sharkey, a Roman Catholic, a pay school, teacher's income, £14.12. Good house, cost £40. Protestant return, 2 English church, 28 Presbyterian, 30 Roman Catholics, 39 male, 21 female, and the Roman Catholic return is ditto. And the church was assisted by the Kildare Place Society and the London Hibernian Society. Mr. Ray, in an article in the Irish Baptist of June 1961, reported that the Listenadier School closed in 1961. Founded in 1826 or thereabouts, it had functioned through the greater part of the 19th century and for two-thirds of the 20th. And in the early years, Mr. W.J. Morrow was the manager. Now there is the whole school with the masters, Mr. and Mrs. Park. The date of that picture is about 1925. And the second girl from the left is Jean Morrow, later Mrs. McKernan, who was the church organist for 65 years. And Master and Mrs. Park were members of Listenadier Church. I put that picture up again because Mr. Morrow was the school manager. And Mrs. Morrow made dinners for the teachers every day. And all the children in the Morrow family attended Listenadier School. The Tyrone Education Authority closed the school in 1961, having erected a new primary school at the same crossroads, across the road from the old school. The church used the school for midweek meetings thereafter, and the youth fellowship made good use of it. Now, I really want to stop. I have this extra bit about George McKillen. He served all those churches in County Tyrone, and he served over more Carndesy and Upperlands Baptist Church when he became pastor in Tobermore. He came from Upper Tully, not far from Murphy's, on the main Ballymena to the Larn line. He was the eldest boy in the family, one of 5 boys and 2 girls. And after leaving school, he was employed in Cameron's hardware shop in Ballymena. This photograph shows him as a young man. And this is probably how he looked when he served in the Belfast City Mission at Ballymacarrick, where he had a great ministry to men. And he looked like that probably when he was a student at the Irish Baptist College in Dublin. Mr. Deans wrote a strange-sounding sentence about him. He said, My own outstanding impression is of how hard one found it to regard him as a man. You have to think about that. It's typical Mr. Dean's. Every inch a man in physical build and spiritual power, yet to the end he was a boy at heart. He radiated brightness and enthusiasm, and there was something delightfully attractive about his cheery laugh and gay spirits and unfailing good humour. Certainly there was nothing of the doleful Christian about George. He found life good, and those who came in contact with him could not but see him. When he completed his studies at the Irish Baptist College, he was available to serve wherever the committee sent him, and so he was sent to Dungannon, Listenadlier and Mullycar. I've already told you about the gift of the motorcycle, and I've told you about his marriage, and I've told you about the additional gift of the sidecar. When he moved to Listenadlier in 1922, the church at Listenadlier had 20 members. I haven't time to read all this for you, but that first part, or that middle paragraph, is important. This work, the work done as a regular service by Mr. McKillen, is almost past belief. For in addition to preaching in Tobermore on Sundays, morning and evening, he preached in the afternoon at Carndaisy, 12 miles away in the direction of Moneymore. On weekdays he conducted a meeting in Carndaisy, one in Upperlands and two in Tobermore, one for the children and one for adults. His visitation of the large area indicated was a heavy task, and yet he found time to undertake a great deal of committee work for the denomination and to engage in other preaching efforts as opportunity arose. It was through his initiative that the churches at Machafelt and Cook came into being, while the hall at Upperlands is a memorial to his diligence in the service of the Lord. And to make a long story short, there were the circumstances of his death. He'd begun the week in good health after a busy weekend, but a throat infection gave him increasing discomfort, developed rapidly in spite of medical attention, and on Thursday afternoon, 22nd October, our brother was at home with the Lord. He had a ministry of about 9 years in Tobermore, Carndaisy and Upperlands, until his death on the 22nd of October, 1931. So there's how George McKillen appeared as a man. Now, at the time of his death, a McKillen Memorial Fund was set up. It was a kind of a reaction from all who came to the funeral. But I have to say, in the interest of truthfulness, that the support of the corpus of the fund was never very substantial. And speaking to his youngest daughter, Eileen, she explained to me that had it not been for their mother's resourcefulness and initiative, the family was barely saved from hard times. She found a house in Ballymena, for many years kept a number of boarders in order to make ends meet. She survived her husband by 46 years until she died on the 16th of February 1987, aged 74. The surviving members are Mr. Oswin McKillen and his youngest sister, Mrs. Eileen Hayburn. Thank you for listening so patiently.